Hi, I'm Carlos Frias, and this is Sundial. Today on the show, we're in conversation with two artists based in Miami who are trying to see things a little differently. Both have new exhibits in Wynwood. First, we'll talk to John William Bailly. When he creates art, he tries to see the place like an outsider. He hikes into the hidden forests and mangroves in South Florida and uses it for inspiration in his art. He wants to help others find a new perspective. He even teaches a class at Florida International University that treats Miami as a study abroad destination. Then we'll talk to Edouard Duval Carrier. His family left Haiti for Puerto Rico when he was a kid, fleeing the dictator Papa Doc. Moving back to Haiti made him realize he didn't understand it. He uses his art to make sense of it. We'll talk to John and Edouard in 5 minutes on Sundial after the news. Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Carlos Frias. Our first conversation today is with the artist John William Bailly. John's lived and worked in Miami for more than 40 years. But when he creates art, he tries to see the place like an outsider. He's an artist in residence at the Deering Estate, near Cutler Bay. One of the ways he creates art is by hiking into the hardwood forest surrounding the property for inspiration. It's the kind of place you can take for granted when you live in a big city. For one piece, John painted the Tequesta burial mound on the property. He tried to envision it as it might have been thousands of years ago. He tries to see a place with fresh eyes and paint from there. He wants to help others find a new perspective. He even teaches a class at FIU that treats Miami like a study abroad program, so students who live here can see Miami in a new way. His artwork is now on display at the Center for Visual Communication in Wynwood. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
So I want to kind of build on that last part, that you teach this study, quote-unquote, study abroad program, but in Miami. And it seems to kind of tie in with your art, with like looking at a place in a new way. Talk to me about the idea for that program.
So I am the faculty director of France, Italy, and Spain Study Abroad. And those programs are incredibly popular with students, not just because of the locations we go, but I realize this because it's experiential learning. When you take kids out of a classroom and engage them directly with the subject, they respond to it more, they identify with it more. And I thought, why not do a study abroad model class in Miami? Because we're one of the most unique cities in the world as far as our flora, but also our cultural diversity. And so what I do is we don't meet in a classroom. We go everywhere from the Everglades to historic Overtown to South Beach to the Deering Estate. We kayak, we hike, we eat together at Jackson Soul Food in Overtown, or La Sandwicherie on Miami Beach. So it's an immersive experience, and Miami is a city shrouded in myth. Hmm. And the reality of Miami is actually more interesting than the myth. And so we try to peel back those layers and find the authentic Miami.
And that sounds like it ties in so much with how you create art. Talk to me about how those things are linked.
Right. So my practice is the process of research of place as it ties to personal and cultural identity. I like to make a deep dive into a certain place, whether it's Miami through the Deering Estate or whether it's in my hometown of Lyon in France. And I do a huge amount of reading, but I also do, I mirror my FIU Honors College classes of hiking and walking and talking to people to try to discover a place. I don't do all the research and then produce a painting. As I'm going on and doing the research, I'm producing work as I go along so that my sense of discovery, I hope, is mirrored in the paintings themselves.
Oh, so your painting actually evolves, your interpretation of the art actually evolves as you spend more time and learn more about a place.
As my understanding of a place develops, mm-hmm. my paintings radically change.
And that's exciting.
It for me it is, because I never know what a painting is going to look like until it's finished, until somebody grabs it away from me. Go ahead.
No, do you ever feel the urge to go back to a painting, or have you reached the point in your career where you can just put that one away and
I think and move a on? Painting or an artwork is never finished until it leaves the artist's studio. Because we're obsessive. We just keep reworking and reworking it. Nothing is ever perfect, and we're obsessive. So I will constantly rework things. I will rework them for 10 years.
Are there any paintings in this exhibit that mirror that idea that's something you've been working on for a long time?
The painting that is in the Center for Visual Communication is curated by Barry Feldman, who is one of these. The Miami art world is full of characters that are in the shadows that have witnessed and have slowly supported and pushed different the Miami art world in different directions. And Barry Feldman is one of these people. So that painting in there was worked on probably, I'd say, over about 5 years. The process of that painting is called Diego and Francisco. And it's the two people really that are on historical record that we know of from the city that is now known as Miami. It's Don Diego, a Tequesta, and who adopted a Catholic name, and Francisco de Villarreal, who was a Jesuit that came and lived at the mouth of the Miami River.
And I have the painting actually in front of me right now, thanks to one of my very able producers, Leslie Y. Atkinson, in the other room. And it's what you see is like burst of color and shape, but then also it's like the forms begin to emerge.
Correct.
Talk to me about the creation of this painting and what you wanted to say with it, because you are kind of time traveling a bit.
Correct. So as I was conducting research on the history of Miami for my FIU class, but Miami and Miami, but also for my paintings, I found that Francisco de Villarreal in January 1568 had written a letter about how his mission was going at the mouth of the Miami River. And I found different translations of this letter in English, passages, and then the dates started changing, numbers started changing, and I wasn't confident that I was reading his original letter. And so eventually I wrote to the Jesuits in Rome. And I said, hey, I'm looking for this letter. Do you guys have it? And it's an email to the Jesuits in Rome. I'm thinking I'm never going to get an answer. And Brother Dario wrote back to me the same day, and he said, that letter no longer exists, but Brother Rogel, who Villarreal wrote it to, transcribed it into his report.
So we have that. Oh, come on. That is amazing.
So he's like, if you'd like to, I can send you a scan of this. I go, yeah, I'd love it. And so I got, through this, the oldest existing copy of the first letter ever written in Miami. And it's an incredible letter, because he talks about everything from mosquitoes to the Tequestas only being interested in mass when he's offering food as well. So and he's aware that of the irony.
If
of
only
this.
Modern priests could have the same the same ability.
And Carlos, I'll tell you one thing that's really cool about this letter that I found is, in order to engage the Tequesta, Francisco de Villarreal put on European style theater performances, and they are the first. They are considered the first ever European theater performances in the continental United States, and they happened at the mouth of the Miami River in 1567, 1568.
I'll tell you what, that would get me back into a church, I think.
Yeah, so
outside of the church, so to speak.
So the painting shows, and Don Diego was a Tequesta that Pedro de Menendez, who was the governor of Florida at the time, took to Sevilla. He took him from what is now Miami to Havana, and then on to Sevilla. He was baptized, became Don Diego. But this is the amazing thing. Not only did he survive that journey, but then he came back to Tequesta and lived out the rest of his life there, completely bilingual and intercultural. And I mean, that's all of us that are in Miami today. So there's these two figures to me were fascinating, because they encapsulate the kind of intercultural culture that defines Miami and all of us today. And this is 1568, and we're already like that.
It was there. It was seeded from the beginning, that kind of multiculturalism.
Correct.
In Miami, right?
And the painting, the landscape of it is that dynamism. It's complementary colors, orange and blue, to show these different cultures and these different people mixing into one reality.
I'm curious how your background helps you see Miami in a particular way. You mentioned you're from Lyon, which is the cradle of chefs, right? Some of the great chefs in the world. Daniel Boulud is from Lyon. Tell me about what brought you to Miami and kind of how does that help you see Miami with these fresh eyes, South Florida with these fresh eyes?
So my family moved from Lyon to Miami in 1978. I was 10 years old. My father, when you're from the French Alps and you see the water of the Florida Keys, you think it's heaven on earth. So we moved here. It was an incredible cultural shock for me because I had gone to all French schools. My mother was American, so I spoke English. But if not, it was a complete cultural clash. And that, in a sense, nomadic sense of identity that from then on, whenever I was in France, I was the American. And whenever I was in the US, I was the French person. It's something that defines all of us in Miami most. We all have two homes.
That immigrant story. Absolutely.
Yes. And so it enables me to be an insider and an outsider at the same time. And that is the heart of my paintings. This notion of home and of place is really a fictional one, an abstract one, that my friend Richard Blanco called a place of mind, a place that exists in our minds.
You had an exhibit with Richard, or a piece that you created some years ago, if I remember.
Richard and I have been friends for, I'd say, almost 25 years. And in 2006, we did an exhibition called Place of Mind that was his poems and my paintings together.
It might be time to revisit that with him winning the Humanities Medal.
Absolutely.
Right?
I'm very proud of him. I think it's great.
Tell me about how then living here, how you start to create a style. How would you describe what your paintings are like? How would you try to visualize them for people?
The constantly evolving cultural identity of Miami, I think, is our strength. It is something that I embrace and I celebrate. As a result, my paintings try to incorporate different artistic influences, not just from art history, but also in the landscape and in the cityscape, where I try to, let's say I take Notre Dame and I put it into the middle of the mangroves. And then I titled the painting Notre Dame de Miami. So it's these abstract places that are a mix of the landscape of there are no mangroves in Europe. But then I put Notre Dame in the middle of it.
Well, what a perfect metaphor for you, right?
It is kind of a self-portrait, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You've actually brought in one today, and there's nothing that I love more than show and tell when we're in the studio. This is a hand-drawn piece?
Yes, so I think of the earliest artworks that we have, which are just some type of stone, a graphite on rock, like these rock paintings that we have throughout the world. And I love the immediacy and the simplicity of that. So I travel quite a bit, and wherever I go, I gather information, not through photographs, but through doing very quick graphite drawings.
Oh, so you'll quickly sketch a place.
Everywhere I go.
The most retro camera there is.
Exactly. Because I love the idea of transformation. When we photograph it, the object determines how it's going to look, mostly. But when I draw it, there's automatically a transformation of perception. And I think whenever anybody draws. And I think one of the worst insults that you could say to an artist is that it looks like a photograph.
Oh, how
right?
heartbreaking.
Yeah, yeah, you don't hurts. Want it to look like a photograph. You want to look like a unique vision.
And so this is when you took a trip where?
So this, when I was at the Deering Estate, which is one of the really the hidden sources of our history for Miami, in the middle of the tropical hardwood hammock. Takes a while to get out there. You always get lost. But there is a place called the Cutler Fossil Site that Bob Carr excavated in the 1980s and is the oldest archaeological site in all of Southeast Florida. They have evidence of human inhabitation that dates back 10,000 years.
Wow.
Human remains that are 6,000 years old. And as I was doing my residency there, I was able to hike out to this this site and go down in, because it's a solution hole. It goes, it's, you go down 24 feet and you go down into it and you know where the human remains were. So our oldest geographic ancestors are in there. And
you're talking like basically like two stories basically below the ground, right?
Correct. And it's all oolite stone around you. So it's like you're in a hole in the earth.
Like an empty sinkhole almost.
The temperature changes, the flora changes. And I sat in there and I drew it all four drawings all the way around. And so then I've used this in quite a few of my paintings because it's really the beginning of humanity in Miami. A selection of my drawings will be in the Draw Point to Point at the Frost Art Museum at FIU this this summer. And anyway, so this was the Cutler fossil site.
And you've hand-drawn this, and it's all in black and white and grayscale.
Correct.
And this is not one of the pieces that are at the exhibit, but you do have several pieces
that are going to be at the Frost.
And then at the Miami Creative Movement.
At the Center for Visual Communication.
At the Center for Visual Communication in Wynwood.
Correct.
John, we're gonna take a break now and come back with one of the other artists there, and then we're going to come back together and have all three of us in conversation about the exhibit. When we come back, we hear from another local artist participating, Edouard Duval Carrier. He tells us how Haitian mythology inspired his work. Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Carlos Frias. Returning to Haiti as a teenager awakened Edouard Duval Carrier to his own history. His family fled Haiti for Puerto Rico when he was a kid. It was the early years of François Duvalier, the dictator Papa Doc. Moving back to the country of his birth was a shock. Edouard was fascinated by Haitian history and culture and religion because he realized he didn't understand it. Edouard says he still doesn't. He tries to make sense of it through his art. His paintings mix religious icons with Haitian mythology and history. They're playful and surreal. You can see them at the Center for Visual Communication in Wynwood. He's here to tell us why he makes art here in what he calls the North Caribbean. Welcome, Edouard.
Hi, how do you do?
Please, Edouard, tell me a little bit of, starting with what it was like to come back to Haiti after leaving at such a young age, and that idea of discovering the place that you were from. How old were you, and what was that like?
I left Haiti with my parents. We moved to Puerto Rico, and at 9 years old, so I was pretty young, and returned to do my last year of high school in Haiti, 15, 16. And truly, it was a shock, in the sense that here is a country that is very problematic with the politics that were very concerning, and it was really revisiting. When I lived there, when my youth, I was very sheltered and secluded, and it is. It was re-encountering a place that I had never really explored before. That's the problem. I was not allowed. I was a kid, and when I returned, I decided to understand what was going on in my nation.
Were you creating art at this age, or still 17 years old? How was art expressing itself in your life at that point?
At that point, I dabbled, and I always was fascinated going to the Centre d'Art, for example, which is this institution which still exists in Haiti, where it was a reunion of all types of artists. Local artist, and I got to meet, I was very young, but they were very old, the first generation of a Haitian artist I'm exaggerating, but it was called like that by foreigners. David Peters, he organized them, they were the first ones to start showing at the Centre d'Art when it opened in 42 or 44, I don't remember exactly.
How much did that affect your love of wanting to pursue a life in art? Were your parents artists, or where did that feeling come from?
Not at all. No one in my family, you know, ever had any idea that I could. I mean, they're still bewildered.
So were they resistant to you becoming an artist?
My father always said at the lunch table that he would not have a Mozart assassiné in his house.
What does that mean?
I mean, he didn't want to be like Salieri that killed Mozart. You know? So I said, when I decided to become an artist, I said, you said that you wouldn't kill creativity in your house.
So he used the power of words against
him. Exactly.
Just like a dang artist.
Exactly. Anyways, in the end, he was very proud of me. It was always, I always made sure that he understood that there was more to it than just creating. I mean, that it was an office, and also that I was interested in telling a story and telling an understanding of where I was from. I mean, understand my country, and that it would be my contribution, not only to Haiti, but, you know, like to the rest of the region, because we all have, I mean, from Canada all the way down to Tierra del Fuego. I mean, we are still product of a colonial system, and people tend to forget that. And places, I mean, have evolved, you know, like much better than others. But Haiti really, you know, like still carries it's in its 200 years of independence or more, the weight of this colonial system with slavery and et cetera, et cetera. So
I've read where you've said that the world never forgave Haiti for
sure
its uprising, and so your work addresses that. Your work ties in all those pieces of
this history that is so present today. I mean, even here when you see the situation, also, you know, like racially, et cetera, and politically, you realize that, you know, like there are. This discovery of the new world was creating something completely different and new. So, I mean, I just want to put these things in. It's like a whole side of history that was either erased or put under the carpet. No interest, and I see a resurgence again today here, you know, like to try to put it back under the carpet. But, I mean, it's a lot of information is circulating. A lot of research has been made, not only on Haiti, but the whole colonial system and how it's, you know, like, and its effect on society.
Of course. And now, take me a little bit into this exhibit that several of the pieces deal with Haitian mythology and looking at voodoo and all these, specifically, like, religion. Talk to me about the things that you learned that influenced some of this work.
Well, sometimes I like, I mean, to delve into, I mean, to go into history properly, but sometimes just words, you know. In that particular exhibit, I mean, what would be a tropical convention visually? And I played with the concept, you know, like to try to ally, you know, like visions of a tropical lush landscape against, you know, field paintings, you know, like color fields in painting.
Right.
And so things like that. I mean, and I was trying to find something different and new, because I'm get bored very fast telling stories of one type or another. So I'm always in the lookout for either in my research, in my the way of, I mean, I'm very interested in academia, so I go, I mean, I've been invited many times to either teach or or consult libraries and things like that, and it's been very rewarding. But sometimes I just like to look at myself and get something different out.
You mentioned Tropical Convention, which is the name of the painting, one of the paintings at the exhibit, and we have it here. And it is a burst of color, but it is kind of like this very detailed look. What it at first appears like a look into like the wilderness with some bright pinks breaking up the green. Tell me a little bit about this piece that people can see in person.
Well, it's something that I decided to do, and I'm trying to do it in the color fields in every you know, like, I would say, taint or a tint that I can think of. I've done many of those by now. This is my latest project. It's literally a dense tropical garden, I would say. Mm-hmm. And and in between it, you have like these splashes of color. And this one is like tropical landscape in pink. I've done it in fuchsia. I've done it in yellow. I've done it in all types of...
It's a different way to approach the idea of a landscape.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I was simply combining. I mean, I'm from Haiti, and the landscape, the lush, the idea of an Eden, you know, which is, I mean, what the Caribbean seems to stand for, and American painting. I mean, like, it's most, you know, at its best, you know, like...
Right, there's so many paintings, especially in classical European, of Eden, the idea of
yes.
Eden, and this being kind of the Haitian ideal of Eden.
Of Eden, exactly.
So, obviously, we're talking about spiritual elements, and you get into some Haitian mythology. Can you talk a little bit about...
Well, again, returning to Haiti, I mean... Yeah, hold and behold, I mean, there is like a religion which is practiced by, I mean, 90% of the population. Well, as they say in Haiti, one is, you know, like the country is 100% Catholic and 100% Vodou.
Exactly.
Very Cartesian.
Cuba's
in mind.
Very much that way too. Yeah. Very Catholic, but it's also, yes. They also have elements of Santeria.
Exactly.
Which is two sides of the same coin.
The point is that it's very Cartesian. You don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Did you grow up, did your religion, your perception of it change when you were in Dominican Republic and then moving back to Haiti? Were you practicing both? Practicing either?
Neither. I just look at them very cautiously and learn their history and understand the, I mean, yes, there is.
I misspoke, Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, indeed. But it is, religion is part of life, and I mean, there's a point where no matter how much you think, I mean, the question is, where are we going from here after this? And I look at, I mean, religions are ways of organizing a society in one way or another, and some of them are more productive. And it, I mean, Vodou became very interesting for me because I realized that a place like Haiti and the way the importation of slaves was in effect by the French, they never really had a counter, you know, I mean, in Africa where they could go and get the slaves. They really were like scrounging. And in the process, I mean, they needed a lot of them to produce the amount of sugar that they managed to do back then. And they had people from Mauritania all the way down to the Congos and stuff like that. This is like practically, I mean, it's continental, you know, like, so you have people from everywhere. And I went to Africa and I realized that their morphology, I mean, like, when you start looking at them carefully, they look like different tribes, you know, I mean, people, it's very, very peculiar. And to realize this, I realized that Haiti's Pan-African before the term was coined, you know.
Of course, and that obviously expressed itself in their religion, in the religion.
Yes, which is a new religion, you know.
Tell me how some of the Haitian mythology expresses itself in your art, like a piece that you might have created that discusses that idea.
First of all, I mean, I went at it very systematically. First, I mean, I found out about all of this the pantheon. Of gods and realized, first of all, that they were at a continental level. Yes, each tribe or each group, social group in Africa has maybe 10, 12 deities. But in Haiti, I mean, like, they multiplied because everybody had to be served, you know? So you have, like, infinite numbers of gods. And now if you're, you know, like, people are, if they are very good, they jump into the pantheon. So it's like an interminable quantity of spirits. And so, I mean, I stopped at 120.
Wow, and you begin to use this in your art.
In my art, I mean, and also, I mean, I really try to figure out what they would look like or what they stood for. And in those kind of in the religions, African religions, because of slavery, they were not allowed to express themselves properly during the first 300 years of the existence of that colony. And in the process, they've really simplified, just the same way in Cuba, into symbols that they would use or display very cautiously. They could not really build a church. They could not build a structure to house their spirits. So these were like very ephemeral kind of thing. So I sat down. My first project was to give them a face. And
and this is it. And this makes its way into your, how it makes its way into your art.
Yes.
Well, I want to talk about how Miami and living here also affects your art. But first, I want to take a break, and I want to have that discussion with you and our other artists together. We've been speaking with Edouard Duval-Carrier. He's a contemporary artist and curator who's participating at an exhibit at the Center for Visual Communication in Wynwood. When we come back, we'll be in conversation with Edouard and John-William Bailly. We're back on Sundial. I'm Carlos Frias, and we're joined by the two artists, John-William Bailly and Edouard Duval-Carrier. Both of them are part of the Miami Creative Movement exhibit at the Center for Visual Communication in Wynwood. That exhibit runs through April 8th. Now, it's great to have you guys both in the room. Now, you've promised me you're not going to turn the show completely into French because
je ne sais pas. Je ne sais pas, peut-être.
I can't keep up with it. En anglais, s'il vous plaît, en anglais. So talk to me a little bit about what it means when you have two artists who are obviously looking at a place differently, and you're both in Miami, and seeing each other's art and how each one of you views the world. What is that like, and to see it displayed in one place?
Well, this is Barry Feldman, as we know him. I think I met him right after I arrived in Miami, and I had a gathering at my place, and he showed up, and he was very talkative, and this is like what, 25 years ago, and I don't see him all the time, but he showed up in my studio and he says, you know what, I'm mounting this exhibit with artists that I like in this town. I mean, there's many artists in Miami, and I said, Barry, if you're doing something, how could I say no? We've known each other for so long. And I was very surprised to see, I mean, his own vision of what he likes from Miami. And it was quite refreshing and quite a nice selection of local artists.
And Barry Feldman, we should say, is the curator of the exhibit.
Yes, that's right.
The Miami Creative Movement exhibit at the Center for Visual Communication. John, tell me what it means to you when you see other artists that you respect create and seeing their different version, this different vision, you know?
So when I was a boy that came from France, I liked foot, which for me is soccer. I liked Asterix and Obelix, and here it was Spider-Man. So there was this thing where I felt like a real outsider. I came in 1978, and then the Marielle boat lift happened in 1980, and I was so happy that people that were also from the outside that recently arrived came as well, because we had that sense of displacement in common, even though our circumstances were incredibly different. My family came because they wanted to, and it wasn't the same dire situation that was faced by the people that came in 1980. Mm-hmm. We are all in Miami a mix of different cultures. Again, our ethnic and cultural diversity is what defines Miami. It's our strength. But each of us have a little bit of a different background. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's so fascinating and motivating, for example, to see the way that Edouard addresses that. He's talking about voodoo and American painting. And the exhibition and the Miami art scene in general is characterized by different artists trying to find their sense of place in a world, in a city that is constantly evolving. And to me, I love that, because what is Miami art? It's a mix of all these different things. I also wanted to note that in the exhibition with Edouard and I is the work of Myra Lair, who was one of the leading artists in Miami, who passed away recently during the exhibition. And I think we, as far as somebody that is constantly reinventing themselves and defining Miami, Myra was one of these leading people, and I just wanted to...
And very open-minded, very extreme. Large, you know, I mean, great spirit.
And something about an exhibit like this is you get to see those different sides of someone, even after their passing, you can see what they gleaned from a place and how it affected them.
So if I can just say a quick story, I was in St. Mark's Square with my FIU Honors College Italy study abroad. And I had a student that was presenting, and you know, my classes look like the UN, and the student that was presenting was Haitian. And so she was talking about like St. Mark's Square and things like that. And this guy comes up to us, he's American. He's like, I know that you guys are a group of students, but I can't figure out where you're from because everybody looks different. And I go,
that's Miami.
I said, well, we're from Miami. He goes, okay, that makes sense. And I think when you see the show at the CVC, it's the same kind of thing. None of our work fits together except that it is Miami and it all deals with a similar subject. But the way that manifests itself in a visual way is incredibly diverse.
But what one has to say as well is that you have a character like Barry Feldman, who has been documenting this city. Because early on, I mean, he went around with the camera. He even made a book recently concerning Miami. And the openness of the city, just like its landscape, its physical place. I mean, it's like a city where it's all sky. Here,
right.
You know, you know, it's really particular because when you live in an urban side, or if there's too many mountains, stuff like that, here's like the sky is very, very prominent and very basic to the city.
So talk to me about Miami as inspiration, because so much of your work is Haiti, was rediscovering Haiti, but now talk to me about how that speaks to Miami in your work.
I came here, I stopped by, I mean, my younger brother, I was studying in Canada at one point, and my younger brother decided the cold was unbearable, so
yeah,
he just left and came down to Miami, and I was very worried about it, so I would come once in a while to visit him and make sure that everything was okay. Miami, I looked, this is way back, and... It took me, I was in France, I had been in a residency in France, invited by the government there, and I came by and I stopped in Miami, and I was going to Mexico, and the flight didn't continue, so I had to call somebody, you know, I mean, here I'm stranded, and they took me down to South Beach at that point. And living in Paris, everybody has to be, you know, it's a very cool place, stuff like that. I said, this beats my Paris, the wildness, you know, like, I mean, by leagues. And I returned to Paris and I told my wife, we are moving. I'm going to Miami. Because, I mean, the idea of going to New York or Los Angeles, I mean, I would have stayed in Paris. But, you know, I visited Miami and I saw that the energy around really pleased me. And the physicality of this place is tropic. It's, I mean, like the only tropical place in the U.S. in the U.S. continent. I mean, and I used to say at the beginning. I mean, people told me to stop it. Can you imagine highways and coconut trees?
Exactly. John, talk some about how your work changes when you're in Miami versus when you're in Spain or in Italy or in France, in Lyon, because I know both of you travel quite a bit. So I'm curious, do you see a change in your work when you're here?
There's an inverse in the urban landscape and the natural landscape, in that if you go to a city like Toledo or the Vieux Lyon, the streets are narrow. The buildings are incredibly tall and skinny, and it's an incredibly claustrophobic space. However, where my father's from is the French Alps. And when you go up there, you can see for miles and miles until you can't see anymore. So the landscape is open. But in Miami, if you go into the authentic, pristine Miami landscape, it's like a tropical hardwood hammock, it's claustrophobic. You can't move around at all without getting hit by trees and different plants. But then our cities, like Ocean Drive, is so open, right? The buildings are not that tall. our streets are wide. So then it's the inverse, the urban and the natural inverses. And so I love to play on that. I love to observe how my drawings of the urban Miami landscape are spacious, but the European one is claustrophobic, and then it's the inverse for the natural landscape.
And what about for you, Eduard? Like, how do you find that being in Miami changes or affects your work?
It was to me, it's the cultural diversity that exists here that really is the most, challenging maybe at the beginning, but the most refreshing aspect of this city. And it's like a beautiful commode, a chest of drawers, where every time you open one and you discover something else. And it's, maybe it's like segregated or not. It's not really that. It's simply that, just the way the city is has permitted for a lot of communities, to gather themselves, within their own community, which is very peculiar, but at the same time they know that they are in a bigger context,
right.
And they bring to the fore, their mores, their cultural givens, et cetera.
Right. There's definitely layers and layers of Miami, especially
yes.
Certainly with early segregation. I think in Liberty City, there's that one wall that runs through it. That was a physical wall between.
And there was
and that's
Miami's Berlin Wall in Coconut Grove.
Yeah, and you get into that in your tours. You're kind of Miami as a study abroad, so to speak.
Correct. So the history of Miami, after the Tequesta, who the last ones leave in 1763, as Florida goes from Spain to England, the Tequesta were here for approximately 2,000 years. And since 763 on, it's been a constant influx of different people coming in, whether it's Spaniards, escaped slaves of African origin from the south, pirates, then English, then Seminoles, Miccosukee. Early Miami is built by Bahamians, and this cultural richness and this ethnic diversity, I don't feel is celebrated enough
yes.
in the way that the history of Miami is talked about, or in definitely how it's taught. In my Miami and Miami class, the first place I take him is to the English slave plantation quarters, which are in Lummis Park downtown. There are old slave quarters downtown. And this is not taught in classes. And a lot of my students have gone to Miami-Dade County Public School and don't know this. They don't know about the Tequesta Circle, the Miami Circle at the mouth of the Miami River, which was a large village, a large town of Tequesta. So it's fascinating to me. Again, the real history of Miami is far more diverse and rich than the mythological Miami that we present ourselves to the world. And I think one of the things that we do as artists in the artistic community is try to bring awareness to this and celebrate it.
Eduard, you mentioned some of the challenges of when you arrive in a place, and in Miami in particular, some of the challenges of Miami. And I'm curious to hear a little bit more about that. As you're an artist and you're trying to understand the place and kind of how you see it, what were some of those challenges?
First of all, I was bold enough. I decided to move into in Miami Beach and in a Jewish neighborhood. I'm not Jewish. I had no idea that my neighbors were.
So now Catholic,
voodoo
Judaism?
Everything. I found it quite fascinating, and also the city's open, as I've been saying, and in a sense that you can circulate very easily here. Maybe not these days because too many people are here.
for
a long time, for 20 years, I've been here. What, 25 years? It was a very pleasant place to, and you could circulate. Yes, it's big. It's people don't realize how large, the metropolis is, because everything is low apart from downtown. There are very few skyscrapers or things of the sort. So you have to move around to get to places. You don't gather into one area as most other modern cities are.
So how is your work different when you're thinking and expressing Miami versus when you're expressing Haiti?
I always I always do it, in a tandem, you know, like, and also this migration towards this city, you know, like, I mean, particularly the Haitians and many others, not just the Haitians, the Cubans. I mean, on one side, the islands, you know, like with their coconuts and their palms, etc. And on the other side is like this forest of modern buildings amidst, again, you know, like this tropical landscape. So to me, it's like this movement back and forth. You understand?
When you talked to me, John, about one of his works at the exhibit that when you walk through and you know you're seeing it set up that struck you. One of his pieces that struck you and that said something
So with Edouard's work, what I'm always fascinated with is how he is able to visualize, to turn into a vision, things that I often think of as abstract, right? So for me, they exist as an idea, but then when Edouard paints them, they become not just an image, but they become a place that I can enter into. It's a mental and a cultural place that he is introducing us to. So Edouard creates a world, and that to me is what is so powerful about his work, that they're not objects. Edouard has a world that he invites us into.
And Edouard, you do the same. Some of John's work, maybe that's at the exhibit, maybe that you've seen in another place, where you said, I understand something about this guy now from seeing this.
I've met him a long time ago. He's a friend of a cousin of mine.
Yeah.
And he showed up at my house, and I saw his work. And of course, he's interested in France they call la matière, you know, like matter. He loves the paint. And the more he applies it, I mean, I was listening to him, of course, 5 years to be applying coats over coats over coats. I mean, it gives you something. And I mean, I arrived in Paris and I was inscribed at, I mean, it was for to work on a project for the Bicentennial, but in the process they gave me access to the Beaux-Arts, and really the discussions there were endless, you know, like on, you know, the thickness, the la matière.
Right. Mean, because some of your work, I mean, I've seen a small piece of a documentary, a trailer of a documentary that's coming about you and your work.
Right.
And so much of it is it's not just painting on canvas, but it's building of layers, right?
Correct. So on April 16th at the Deering Estate, there'll be the premiere of a film by director Jorge Gropera that we started in Miami, and logically, as we talked, took us across the Atlantic to Paris and Lyon. So the film that will be presented at the Deering Estate shows the transatlantic dialogue, which is central to who I am and also to the development of Miami. I think that I search for my own paintings within the painting rather than having an idea and illustrating it. I'm looking for something. And several artists, including Willem de Kooning, have talked about painting with a good ear so that you listen to your painting. And so I'm in a constant conversation. I have no idea how my paintings are going to end up. And that leads to a formality of development of layering through the paint. And I layer up the oil paint, so it allows me to get several inches thick.
Edouard,
did you hear? Yeah. It's not even millimeters.
Yeah,
it's inches.
Inches thick. In the last minute that we have here, Edouard, tell me what you hope that visitors to the exhibit will get from it, will walk away from it.
It is cross-generational for Miami. I mean, there are artists that have been here, some of them probably born here, to very young, I mean, or recent arrivals to Miami, because that's what we all arrived here. And the scope, the quality of the work, I mean, Barry has a fine sense of the arts, and that's what really... They're all good artists, and they all are serious and, how would I say it? They all have their own language, and that becomes, you know, like the sign of Miami. Nobody's, like, copying each other.
artists Edouard Duval-Carrier and Jean-William Bailly, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
They're both participating artists at the Miami Creative Movement exhibit at the Center for Visual Communication in Wynwood. It runs until Saturday, April 8th. And that's Sundial for Wednesday, March 29th. Leslie Ovalle Atkinson is our lead producer. Elisa Baena is our producer and social media editor. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's VP of News. Katie Munoz is our director of live programming. Peter J. Mertz is WLRN's vice president of radio and Sundial's engineer. Our theme music is by the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Palo at goatpalo.com. You can download a podcast of this program. Just search for WLRN Sundial on your podcast app. Coming up tomorrow on the program, are we living in a simulation? It might sound like science fiction, but some scientists are taking it seriously. A documentary film, A Glitch in the Matrix, dives into that question. The director joins us tomorrow on Sundial. I'm Carlos Frias. Thanks for listening.
WLRN Public Media.